Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Live from the Investors Bank Studio, Boomer Esiason and Greg Giannotti, Boomer and Gio on the Fan, and across the country on CBS Sports Network. Good Wednesday morning. We've got a couple of losses to talk about in New York baseball. One for the Mets that's just extremely frustrating. One for the Yankees that'll be forgotten about when they go and win this series, most likely. But with the Mets, and we won't spend all day on the Mets because it's just depressing last night, but with the Mets, Jose Reyes, I'm going to pile on. Everybody's going to pile on. He is not a Major League Baseball player right now. Not offensively, not defensively. There's only room for one underachieving Jose on this team, and that's going to be Jose Bautista. You got to move on from Jose Reyes. And for Zach Wheeler, and really, it's about the offense last night not being able to break through. But for Zach Wheeler, can you deal with adversity just a little bit better for once? I mean, I know you had the error from Reyes, but once, can you work through something with a little bit of gumption? Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
You know, I'm doing okay. I'm not going to come in here and scream and yell about Jose Reyes. We all know what's going on there. I mean, it's, the end is near if it's not already here. And he definitely cost them, a game last night. Now, as far as Zach Wheeler, I wanted to watch every single pitch. I wanted to see how he looked last night. He had 9 strikeouts. He had a little bit of adversity, yes. You know, I thought actually Cabrera should have made the catch at first base on Jose Reyes' double clutch and throw over there. But at the end of the day, you know, he gets victimized by just a ground ball up the middle. I actually thought he pitched okay for me. I thought he pitched okay. And I thought he pitched well enough for the team to win if they don't make mistakes behind him in the field. But they didn't get any hits, and Caleb Smith was pretty good. So, I mean, that was one of those games where you just say to yourself, okay, the starting pitching did fine. They were victimized by poor fielding, and they couldn't get a key hit to save their life. So,
well, that lineup was just gross. And I understand that Nito has to play because Mesoraco's dealing with that elbow and the fluid sac that had to get drained, whatever. But the fact that Jose Reyes is in the game, and you throw Bautista right in there, which I kind of liked. I mean, he shows up at the ballpark. You throw him right in there against the lefty.
Oh, yeah, the double his first time
right,
up.
Right, so. That's how he's going to be used. But it just, you know, you've got, you know, Reyes and Nito and then the pitcher spot there. It's just all these guys, you know, Reyes, when you look at Reyes and Nito and these guys' numbers when they're hitting back-to-back in a lineup, you always use the term black hole. I mean, that's the blackest of holes right there with those two guys.
Know, Reyes worked out a walk last night and did have a hit, so it's not like he wasn't on base.
He's done.
I understand. We were talking about it the last 3 days, and all of a sudden they put him at third base last night, and those things happened to him, and it's easy now to pile on. I agree that his time here with the Mets is going to be short-lived. It should be short-lived. Somebody loves him over there. And but it cost you a game last night. And I was more focused on what exactly was Zach Wheeler going to do last night. And I actually thought he pitched okay. He went 6 innings, and he got 9 strikeouts. And you know what was interesting? I was looking at Gerrit Cole, and I was watching some of his stuff yesterday and just watching some of his highlights and all that other stuff. Gerrit Cole throws about as hard as Zach Wheeler does.
Well, that's the thing that's so maddening about Zach Wheeler is he tantalizes you with his stuff, and it never seems to be able to put together.
But I thought he was okay last night. I really did. I mean,
you were just talking about how horrendous this lineup was. I understand that he got screwed with some bad defense there, but we just saw Jason Vargas mow all these guys down. And I would give
Zach Wheeler like a B performance last night, and you could win with that. And, you know, a couple times he had 97 on the gun. And I don't, you know, when I was watching Gerrit Cole, and I'm like, why is it that people are having a hard time hitting Gerrit Cole? Yet when, Wheeler needs to get a strikeout or something, why can't he get that strikeout? Although last night there were about 3 different times, and Ronnie was talking about getting the key outs. He did get the key outs.
Well, he didn't after the error, and that's the one that you really need.
Yeah, but
to
that
see.
Was like a seeing eye ground Please. Ball. The guy didn't hit it hard. It was like I'm okay with what Zach Wheeler did last night. I'm not okay with Jose Reyes, and you're right. And I'm also not okay with what Domingo Germán did last night.
Yeah, I know. And Gary Sanchez, I'm guaranteed we're going to get Gary Sanchez calls today on three wild pitches. Then none of them were called pass balls, but three wild pitches in the second inning. Now, the first two, to me, I'm not going to get on Gary Sanchez. The third one, I thought he was a little bit slow.
He's lazy.
That one I didn't love. The first two, though, I mean, he set up on the outside corner with the lefty up on the first one, and then the pitch is all the way on the other side of the plate and down, so he has to go and backhand it. So, I mean, that one. And the second one, even Cohn said it on the broadcast, you know, Germán didn't get to the plate quick enough. He blocked it. He sort of kept it in front of him. If Germán gets to the plate quick enough, boom, he'll be able to get the out at home.
I mean, last night, you know, Domingo Germán was all over the place.
He was.
And, you know, you could put Johnny Bench back there and balls would be in the ground bouncing all over the place.
Right. This was not a Gary's pile on Gary Sanchez.
No, I'm not. You know, I looked at all those highlights this morning and I was like, okay, I see. It's like Sonny Gray and Domingo Germán are nothing but throwing dirt. It's amazing.
They live in the dirt.
And you remember, what's his name, Mickey Callaway at the beginning of the year, Dirtball Reed, right?
Right, and that guy got a great Dirtball Reed when he came home. He did. He broke right away. So that one and that run is not, to me, not on Gary
Sanchez.
I thought
that was Cole Hamels' night last night.
Yeah, he was really good. And now that's one of these names that's surfacing for the Yankees to go out and trade. But
they better trade for somebody, man.
And I guess that he would have to waive his no trade clause to the Yankees. There's 21 teams that he's got a no trade clause to, and the Yankees are one of them. So, I mean, I would imagine with the season that the Rangers are having that he would want to be a part of this thing if the Yankees are going to go out and trade for him. But, you know, I mean, this is not Cole Hamels of 2007-2008, but would he be that big of an upgrade for a team that's looking to win a championship?
Well, after watching him last night, I would say yes.
Yeah, I mean, his seven innings, he was great. I mean, the guy was absolutely great, especially against an offense that's been, you know, historically hitting home runs, and they hit some more last night. It's amazing. It's every single night there's more home runs from this team, and it doesn't, I mean, you get Romine involved. It really is amazing. Yeah, but last night it looked great. So, I mean, that's another one of these trade targets, and it's certainly not going to take prospects like Andujar and Gleyber Torres these other guys to go and get Cole
right,
Hamels.
So that's the other side. Does Cole Hamels give you what you think you're going to need in order to make it through Houston? Because I think ultimately that's who these guys are going to meet. It's going to come down to a seven-game series versus the Houston Astros and who's going up against Verlander. And you know that Houston will refortify its bullpen. Right, or fortify its bullpen come the trading deadline, because that's probably what they feel like they need to do. So, and by the way, Houston's been heating up as the last few weeks as well, and that's one of the reasons why I want to look back at Gerrit Cole to see what he looks like, because I hadn't really seen him pitch yet.
Yeah,
and I'm telling you, man, the guy is hitting about 97, 98 on the gun. Guys are flailing at his pitches for some reason, and then I'm sitting there watching Zach Wheeler last night. I'm going, well, God, he throws the same.
Well,
I mean, why does he have the amount of problems he does?
Well, Gerrit Cole, the last couple of years in Pittsburgh prior to going to Houston, was not the same pitcher he is now. But early on in his career, I mean, he was an ace. He had ace-type stuff. I saw him in Pittsburgh. And I think the biggest difference between those two guys is the mentality on the mound. I mean, you watch Gerrit Cole, every time he's on the mound, he's going to kill somebody out there. He's out there just trying to get everybody out. He's so fired up. And I don't see that from Mats. I don't see that from Wheeler. I don't see those things. And Mickey Callaway's been talking about it since spring training. You don't see that killer instinct from those guys that you see from guys like Gerrit Cole now. When you're on a team that just won a World Series and you're there with Justin Verlander and everything's great, sometimes you gain that confidence through that. And the Mets right now are not that confident of a group.
Well, I think you're right. And I also think you're right when you talk about the personality of Zach Wheeler compared to Gerrit Cole. Because last night, watching Zach Wheeler in the midst of all of that crap that was going on in the second inning, you know, I know you're not going to yell at your teammates. You could get mad at yourself for giving up a hit or something. You know what I mean?
And you
just don't see, you know, that coming from him. You know, it's just like a very matter of fact. Let me be a professional. Let me get on the mound. Let me do my stuff. But he does have electric stuff. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Now the question is can a personality be developed that when he does get on the mound, he's going to have that Justin Verlander way of doing things or the Gerrit Cole way doing things. I think the way that CC Sabathia used to pitch when he was throwing 96, 97 miles an hour. You know, I mean, and I know that they were talking about how Mesoraco was trying to get, Zach Wheeler to work on the inside of the plate and all that other stuff, and they were showing it last night. And I thought that Ronnie and Keith did a really good job of explaining how they're trying to get more out of Zach Wheeler by where they want him to put his pitches in terms of pitch location and all that other stuff. So I actually thought he did overall pretty well.
Yeah, you know what I found interesting? You were talking about with Mesoraco working with Wheeler, but they did a whole thing on how Adrian Gonzalez has been talking to the pitchers about developing splitters and how hard that is to hit when you're a left-hander.
That's great.
I mean, that to me was like shocking that Adrian Gonzalez is that much of a mentor to the staff. But another big story, we touched on it with Jose Bautista getting signed by the Mets and getting right in that lineup. I mean, he showed up at the ballpark like an hour before the game, put the uniform on, and was out there in the starting lineup, and he was on his couch at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, got a call, and then at 6 o'clock he's walking into the clubhouse. You know, I don't really think that this is something that's going to hurt them all that much. I mean, we're talking about a minimum salary. Yes, it's a 1 year major league deal. If it doesn't work out,
same thing with Adrian Gonzalez. It's the same thing.
It really can't hurt you. I mean, it really can't. I mean, people say, why are you signing him? He's hitting under 200. The guy stinks. He looks like he's done. His bat speed's gone. He's not a great defensive player. All right, but what if? What if you capture something there? You don't have any right-handed power outfielders. The guy has had a history, of course, of being an unbelievable power hitter. He may be done, but he's out there and he's cheap, and that's what the Mets do.
What is the headline in today's post that is associated with Ken Davidoff's article?
Oh, they got to get younger. Yeah, the Mets have to get younger. Yeah. Oh, and this is, but that's exactly why we were bringing up the stuff we were bringing up the last couple of weeks. How do you do that quickly? And then that would be, if you're out of it, you got to trade some major assets.
Well, you don't do that right now, but those are the things that you got to be looking at. I mean, long term. I mean, if you are taking Jose Bautista off the scrap pile and throwing him out in left field, and you have Adrian Gonzalez on, you know, a very short term deal, very cheap deal at first base, how long do you expect those guys to last?
Honestly,
do you expect to get out of them over a 162 game season? How many games are they going to play? What's their average going to be? How many key hits are they going to get? How many strikeouts are they going to be? I mean, those are the types of things that you have to ask yourself. And that's why, you know, Ken Davidoff is right. And I've been saying it now for over 2 months that this team has got to get younger. It's got to get younger. I don't know how you do that right now, but ultimately that's going to be the quest for Sandy Alderson and for the Wilpons is to somehow try to mirror what's happening in the Bronx.
Yeah, and another thing about this Bautista signing that's a little bit alarming for the Mets and Yoenis Cespedes is it doesn't sound like he is anywhere close to coming back. Because if you listen to Sandy Alderson in his press conference, he basically said, well, Cespedes is going to be out for some time here, and that's going to be an opportunity for Jose Bautista, and I think that he knows that, and that's why he signed here when he had other options. So, I mean, I can't even fathom now dealing with that. When's he going to come back? Is he getting close, Cespedes? When he does come back, is he going to be 100%? Is he out there hobbling? I really think that this Bautista signing has a lot to do with maybe where Yoenis Cespedes is health-wise, which is not a good thing for them.
All right, and a couple other things that we need to talk about today. And football fans, buckle up, man, because this is going to get really interesting this year. So these helmet hits could lead to ejections now. And Alberto, the replay reverser Riverond, is basically discussing now how guys can get kicked out of games, and they're going to be using the feeds from the networks to decide whether or not a guy will be kicked out of games if he uses his helmet in a way that they deem unsafe and unnecessary.
Right, and it'll be reviewable. They'll take a look at it, right?
I'm just telling you, this is just another thing now that fans are going to be screaming about, depending on how they implement this thing. And what Alberto Riveron sees from a technical, literal standpoint, and as we see it as just another play in a game of football, they are so sensitive about the injuries and everything else that's around a game where people are flying at each other and throwing their bodies at each other, that now there's a potential. Could you imagine if somehow, some way, I don't know, let's say Le'Veon Bell gets a ball out of the backfield and he lowers his head and he leads with his helmet, like, I don't know, running backs have been doing since they've been since they became running backs.
I really hope that that's not an example that is going to be plausible next year.
They're also saying offensive linemen could be subject to this rule as well. So I can't imagine
it's going to be that bad.
I want to know how they're going to institute this.
To me, it's all about the wide receiver over the middle and the safety coming in, launching himself. That's what it has to be. It can't be anything else.
Right.
It can't be a running back lowering his head. It can't be an offensive lineman trying to block a guy. It has to be defenseless receiver, intent to lead with the head, helmet to helmet contact.
This is all. This is going to take encompass the entire game. All over the field, all players are going to be subject.
They're not
going to.
You can't tell me they're going to be tossing running backs out of games.
I swear to God, I can't wait for these replays now, and I can't wait for fans just to absolutely snap. Who do you think the first guy will get thrown out of a game will be?
Oh, it'll be a safety. It'll be a safety at some point. I don't know, in the first 6 weeks. I mean, I can't. I know what you're saying by the letter of the law, what this could mean, but there's no way. They're throwing out a running back for lowering his head. If they do that, the game—I mean, the football's over. It's done. No one's gonna We talk about all the perception of people leaving the game. If you start tossing out skill position players in games for lowering their head with the ball,
but here's the problem. I mean, like I just try to put myself in the mix as a player these days and think about all the things that you have to think about while you're playing the game. So number one, you don't get fined. And number two, you don't get thrown out of the game. And I understand trying to make the game safe. Of course, I'm all for that, but we also have to be realistic and practical about what's going on out on the field and how players play the game instinctively and how they protect themselves most of the time by lowering their head or leading with their head, because that's where your body goes. Would I trust any one of those players on the other team to be playing the game the way I'm playing the game? So I'm trying to take my head out of the game, so I'm running straight up. So I can run straight up because I know a guy is not going to hit me with his helmet in the ribs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we realistic about that?
No. I mean,
So that means the offensive player is going to be running and bending down to protect himself.
Well, yeah, it's lowering the target area, and a guy who has already started to move and to tackle, it's very tricky.
I am all about teaching the players to take the head out of the game. That is 100%. I am all about that. I get that. But I just think these things, these collisions happen so fast. They react so naturally that you could probably look at 50 helmet collisions last year where you are going to be throwing players out of games.
Well, I think that what they want to do is they want to mimic what we've been seeing with college football. And college football, you see this targeting rule and guys getting ejected. There's some controversial ones here or there. There's some cut and dry ones here or there. I don't see ones that are just so bad or offensive players. I'm not gonna panic about this one yet. I'm not. I mean, I probably shouldn't be trusting the NFL in this situation to do it the right way. I have to imagine that they're smarter than that.
And you want to know something? The playoffs this past year in the NFL, I believe, were officiated and replay officiated completely differently than they were in the regular season. They played under two sets of rules. That's what I think. I think they were told to, hey, you know what? Let's understand what a catch is, and let's not be so literal about how we are enforcing the replay aspect of the rule. And it changed the way the game was played in the playoffs. I thought the game was played better in the playoffs, but they did subtly change the way that they replayed certain plays. I don't care what anybody said. You can go back and you can look at all the different replays. And I don't know whether or not it was the commissioner who said something around the Super Bowl when he was talking about the state of the league, and he understands what fans are frustrated by of what's a catch, what's not a catch. And unfortunately for 31 other teams, the Patriots benefited from a lot of this stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, and everybody immediately jumps to the conspiracy theory of Kraft and Goodell have such a good relationship. So, you know, these are all the different things that are going on in the NFL. And they also said in the NFL, and this will never happen, that they're considering a 15-yard penalty for players who take a knee during the national anthem. That rule is not going to happen. Basically, what the rule should say is when you are in your uniform or you are wearing anything that associates you with the team during game day and you are on our field in our stadium and we are paying your salary, you will stand for the national anthem or you will not play. That's what it should be. And I am total in lockstep in what Jerry Jones feels about this whole thing. And, you know, these guys can nuance all this crap all they want. But doing stuff like this is ridiculous.
Well, the NFL made it way more confusing than it needed to
be. Just keep it simple.
They're going to leave it up to the teams, and then maybe they'll stay in the locker room for the anthem.
No,
maybe
no,
they
no.
won't.
You wear my uniform on my field in my stadium. You will stand for the national anthem. That's all there is to it. You want to go out, you want to burn the flag in the parking lot without my stuff on, and you want to be yourself, and that's the way you want to be characterized. You want to protest. Fine. Go do all that stuff. Off the field.
Well, the NFL's leaving it up to the owners, and I think most owners are going to feel that way, and most owners
They'll vote on it by either today or tomorrow, and they'll have some set rule. Hell, you know, I'm watching the NBA last night. They got the American flag on the backboard.
Yeah.
The American flag is on the backboard in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing now? All those guys stand for the national anthem.
Yeah, they haven't had
Guess
one
what?
Instance.
You stand for the national anthem. Also, you wear my uniform, you're in my stadium, and you're on my field, and I'm paying you $20 million to play football on Sunday. You will stand for the national anthem.
And all those guys are very socially active, too, in the NBA. The biggest stars are socially active, and they still stand for the national anthem. They understand the separation between the two. They do.
And the NBA is smart. They got the flag on the backboard. You see it every time a ball goes up towards towards the backboard. There's the flag. There it is. And they're associating themselves with the flag in the NBA. So you know what? The NFL has done this for years and years and years. They've celebrated the flag. They've celebrated patriotism. Everything around the game brings people together. That's what it's all about. It's not about separating people. So it's a private workplace. I pay you. You wear my uniform. You play on my field. You're going to stand for the national anthem because that is going to be a universal rule. If you don't like it, then don't show up and don't put the uniform on, and you will not get your paycheck. I'm sorry. That's just the way it should be, and that's the way it always should be, and that's why I'm in lockstep with Jerry Jones on that one. So, by the way, I can't even believe that the NFL is fumbling it like this.
Oh, you can't believe that the NFL is fumbling something?
That's shocking. But this one in particular is so simple. It is just so simple.
I mean, there is not a thing that the NFL comes up with that doesn't surprise me if they screw it up. I'm sorry. That's just the way I feel about it. It doesn't surprise me at all. Why make it this complicated? Because they're trying to make everybody happy, and they're scared of a particular thing. And the NFL always operates wondering how people are going to think about them. They always operate with this is what the reaction is going to be to us, so let's do it this way so we try to make everybody happy.
All right, I'm going to start another conspiracy theory. You ready for this one? So I don't know if you saw Bill Belichick talking yesterday about Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski not being at their OTAs.
He goes, we're not going to talk about the guys who aren't here.
Right, yeah. Did you notice what he was wearing?
I didn't. I just read the quote.
All right, so normally he usually wears some sort of hoodie with the with the sleeves cut off or something, like he's his own tailor. You know what I mean? So he has one of these wind shirts, pullover wind shirts, right? Look what's missing on that pullover.
Is it a Patriots logo?
It was taken off of it. Now, really? I don't know if this is what he does all the time. I don't know if I just noticed it yesterday because, this thing between him, Kraft, and Brady and all this other stuff, that he decided to rip the Patriot logo off the wind shirt that he was wearing, or he was wearing it inside out. I don't think he was wearing it inside out, but I do think he had the Patriot logo removed from the wind shirt that he was wearing yesterday for his press conference.
That's
if CBS Sports Network can find it, and we'll show it on CBS this morning, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
You know what? They're going 6-10 next year. That settles it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.